forgiveness is a choice, right? But it's also not like, it's not a threshold that you cross. It's not a finish line. You don't wake up one day, forgive, and now you made it.
Hey, leader, and welcome to another episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow to your maximum potential and to maximize the impact of your leadership. My name is Doug Smith, and I am your host, and today's episode is brought to you by my friends at Baratung Advisors. We also recorded this live from the new Burgo Realty Studio. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope that you enjoy our content and become a subscriber. Know that you can also watch all of our episodes over on our YouTube channel, so make sure you're subscribed there as well. And as always, if you've been listening to the podcast and it's made an impact on your life, it would mean the world to me if you leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts through. That really does help us to grow our audience and reach more leaders, so thank you in advance for that. Well, leader, in this week's episode, you're going to hear my conversation with Leon Ford, and if you do not know Leon, you are in for a treat. I've been hearing about him for years that I need to meet with him, and I had the opportunity to have lunch with him in fall last year, and having lunch with him was one of the top five highlights of my year. He's that powerful, and his story is that powerful, but I don't want to ruin anything because he's going to share a lot of his story in this conversation, and so I'll let you get to know Leon, but here's what I can promise you. You're going to be inspired, you're going to be challenged, and you're going to fall in love with Leon. He is incredible. But before we dive into his story, just a few announcements. This episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast is sponsored by Baratung Advisors. The financial advisors at Baratung Advisors help educate and empower clients to make informed financial decisions. You can find out how Baratung Advisors can help you develop a customized financial plan for your financial future by visiting their website at baratungadvisors.com. That's B-E-R-A-T-U-N-G advisors.com. Securities and investment products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Baratung Advisors, LPL Financial, and L3 Leadership are separate entities. I also want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. And my wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers and had an incredible experience. And not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, for every couple that comes in engaged, they give them a book to help them prepare for marriage. And we just love that. So if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out HennyJewelers.com. And with all that being said, let's dive right in. Here's my conversation with Leon Ford. Leon Ford, welcome to the L3 Leadership Podcast. Man, it's such a joy to get to know you. We had lunch maybe 2 months ago, and I was telling many people since that that was one of the highlights of my year in 2023. And it's just such an honor to get to know you. And obviously, after meeting you and hearing your story, I'm like, everyone on the planet needs to hear this. And so really looking forward to the conversation, brother.
Oh, man. Thank you, Doug. And, you know, your leadership and everything you're doing with L3 is very inspirational. So I'm happy to be a part of the family, man.
Let's go. Well, let's dive in. And again, I've kind of shared, but you have an incredible story, which has actually been documented in a book that you came out with last year called An Unspeakable Hope. And the tagline is Brutality, Forgiveness, and Building a Better Future for My Son. And so that's what I'll dangle out there for listeners. And why don't you just kind of unpack that for us? What's your story?
Absolutely. So when I was 19 years old, I was shot 5 times by a Pittsburgh police officer, once in my neck, 2 times in my chest, once in my arm, and once in my hip. And one of the bullets that went through my chest actually paralyzed me. So you can't see it now because, you know, we're like chest up, but I'm actually sitting in a wheelchair right now. So I lost my ability to walk. And so that speaks to the brutality aspect. Mm-hmm. I became a activist, you know, did a lot of organizing locally and nationally. But along my journey, you know, found, forgiveness, you know, and I'm sure we'll unpack that, you know, within this interview. But, you know, I was able to, you know, open my heart up to forgive. And now I work with police officers. I've trained police officers, and I co-founded a foundation alongside the former police chief here in Pittsburgh.
Wow. What's the foundation called?
It's called the Hear Foundation. And the name of the foundation comes from this idea that we don't have all the answers. you know, and so we're actively listening to community, to their needs, and not just, you know, the community, but also what are the needs of our police officers.
Yeah. Well, we'll unpack that a little bit later, but you just kind of shared an overview of your story, which is incredible. But, you know, that was quite a journey. And so, you know, I want to kind of dive in, you know, after you got shot, you know, you sounded said so nonchalantly, like I eventually forgave, you know, did the next day you wake up and say, oh, it's no big deal. You know, hey, I forgive you. It's all good. Like, what was that journey to forgiveness? Like, did you deal with bitterness? Did you deal with frustration, depression? Like, walk us through, you know, the months and years after that happened.
Oh yeah. It was, you know, certainly years of depression. Years of resentment, years of anger, years of hatred. You know, there were moments where I felt completely consumed by hatred. And I remember vividly, you know, waking up in the hospital and looking up, the article about me being shot. And it said, black teen shot by a white police officer. And I remember going to read the comments, and the comments were extremely racist, you know, racial comments about me, about my family, you know, and it was heartbreaking. And so in that moment, I told myself that I not only hated police officers, but I hated white people.
Wow.
And however, my nurses and my doctors were so nice to me. They took such good care of me. And, you know, I credit them along with my sixth grade teacher, Ms. Shank, who came to visit me for, you know, helping to soften my heart. Mm. And they didn't know it at the time, but I felt this deep hatred to all white people. And I said to myself, well, I hate all white people, but Miss Shank, you know, and I hate all white people, but, you know, my nurses and my doctors. And so, you know, that experience really helped keep my heart open. And eventually I was, you know, open to, you know, going to the Pittsburgh Friends meeting and building a relationship with the Quakers here in Pittsburgh, which, you know, when I went, it was predominantly white people. And then I would meet some, you know, police officers who, you know, saw my humanity, and they would, you know, talk to me and they would say, man, this is, you know, wrong what you experienced and things like that. And so, you know, I took a liking to those people, and I realized that, you know, sometimes we experience things in life that makes us, you know, judge an entire group of people, which is, you know, sometimes, you know, it can be justified to that person experiencing that pain. And so, you know, now as I, you know, navigate life, I'm very intentional about, you know, showing up with kindness, with grace, and wisdom when I interact with people, because you never know what their experience has been and how they may feel about a group that you represent. It may not be you, you know, but, you know, trauma is trauma, man. And, you know, people have experienced, you know, different trauma on different levels. And so those experiences really helped me become more compassionate. But it took years, bro. Like, I'm talking 5 or 6 years of, you know, of this dance between, hope and despair. And the hope led me to want to, you know, embrace people and build relationships. But then that despair, you know, that's where that hatred came, you know, and the resentment. And it was like a pendulum, bro. It was like, you know, some days I would be talking about healing and hope and inspiration. And then other days I was just in such a dark place that I didn't even, you know, I didn't even want to live, you know. I struggled with, those, negative thoughts of not even wanting to be alive, bro. So it was tough.
Yeah. And I would love to, and I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. But on the other end of that, one day you were bitter, the other day there was hope. And I feel like there's so many people listening to this. We say all the time at Light of Life that the average adult, by the time they reach adulthood, has had at least one traumatic experience. For Light of Life, oftentimes the men and women walking through our doors have experienced three or four by the time they're 18, and then multiple thereafter. And just with the mental health crisis in our nation, I mean, I feel like so many people have experienced so many things, and I feel like they walk that same line that you were walking. And I feel like if they feed the bitterness end, then they're going to go down one path. If they feed the hope end, what advice would you have for someone, regardless of what they've experienced, who's walking that line? What would you tell that person listening today?
Well, I would encourage them to stay as close as possible to the people who are bringing light into their lives. Hmm. Right. I talk a lot about mentorship, and I was able to seek out, positive mentors who would pour into me, wisdom, spirituality, love, compassion, understanding. They would make space for me and encourage me. I really needed that. I would read, literature that was encouraging and inspirational. I would be mindful of the music that I listened to. Mm-hmm. I would only listen to positive music and positive podcasts. I would stay away from, any negative music, people, who had a more of a negative perspective of life, people who are doing the wrong things. It's interesting because I would simultaneously, grow as a leader as I was healing from the inside out. I also go to therapy, talking to someone professional, was very instrumental in my growth. And I would also say that talking to professionals helped my relationships, right? Even with loved ones, because once, I began going to therapy, my brother became my brother and my sister became my sister. My cousins were just my cousins. My parents were my parents. They weren't my therapist. And oftentimes, we lean on friends. It's interesting. I have friends right now who lean on me to have conversations that they would have with a therapist, but they say they would never go to therapy. and so the benefit of, finding a good therapist and having those conversations is that you get to really, enjoy those relationships, on a deeper level, without, sharing that trauma, you get to work through that trauma, with your therapist instead of unpacking them with your loved ones who's now carrying it with them wherever they go. I've become a better friend. I've become a better, leader, more thoughtful, more, compassionate and understanding. Yeah.
I love that. And, one of our core values at L3 is community. We always say that no leader should ever do life alone, but in community. And who you spend time with, as you just said, is extremely important, regardless of what you've gone through. If you surround yourself with negative people who are bitter, that's the path you're going to go. If you surround yourself with positive people who fill you with hope and encouragement, that's the direction you want to go. And, I always tell people that the community you need is one in which you're fully known, fully loved, and fully challenged. Absolutely. And fully known is just you can be yourself, share anything. Fully loved is you're going to be loved unconditionally regardless. But the third part, and I want you to share a story here, is fully challenged. And I basically tell people, sometimes we need a hug and a pat on the back, but other times we need slapped in the face.
Yeah.
And I know you had a circumstance come up where you went on a social media rant, and I believe a few mentors who loved you fully and know you fully also challenged you fully, and that ended up changing your life. Can you share that story?
Absolutely. So after George Floyd was murdered, I remember our former mayor, Bill Peduto, and former police chief, Scott Schubert, they had a press conference on the news. And you know, something about this press conference triggered me. And I went to Twitter, and which is now X. And I kind of went on this rant. I went on a
rant.
I went on a rant and called them racist, you know, called the mayor racist, called the chief racist. I said they didn't care about black people and all these things. The interesting thing about that is there was like this instant gratification to be divisive, because each of those tweets got hundreds of retweets. Right. And so I was kind of encouraged to dive deeper into that darkness. Right. Yeah. However, two people reached out to me. One was John Henney, of Henney Jewelers, who was, you know, near and dear to my heart, man. He's like one of my closest mentors. And he basically said, hey, you know, do you really think, you know, Bill is racist, you know? And I was like, yeah, you know, and, you know, he challenged me on that. You know, I don't think he's racist. And, you know, I would love for you to like to sit down with him. You know, have you ever sat down with him? And I had not. And, you know, John basically, you know, facilitated a meeting between Bill Peduto, Dan Gilman was there, and myself. And we just hit it off. I mean, Bill just texted me today his article that he wrote. But, you know, we're friends make a long story shorter. John challenged me, and I've become friends with, you know, someone that I completely tried to destroy on social media. And the same thing with Laura. You know, she reached out to me. Have you ever sat down with the chief? And at that point, I had not. And she facilitated a lunch with our former chief, Scott Schubert, and I. And we became friends. And out of that friendship, we were able to, you know, several months later, and, you know, we begin having conversations about collaborating on a project. And that project eventually became the HEAR Foundation that we co-founded together. And our first year, we raised over $2 million. Last year, we gave out over $300,000 across, I believe, 18 different organizations. And so, you know, I went on a rant, you know, my mentors, you know, they brought me into the light, and a lot of good came out of me being open to sitting down with people I thought, you know, negatively about.
Yeah. And I want you to take us to those meetings, whether it was lunch or coffee or whatever. Yep. You know, when you're one, you know, when John said, do you really think that, and you need to have a meeting, like, what were you feeling going into the meeting? Like, was there fear? Was there anger? And then when you actually sat down, like, what was that experience like to get to the point where it went from you're racist to, hey, now we're buddies and let's do something together?
Yeah. One, I trust both, you know, John and Laura. You know, I trust them too with my life. And so I knew, you know, these meetings were being facilitated by people who genuinely cared about me. There was no ulterior motive. It wasn't political. There wasn't going to be cameras and all these things. And I believe that, you know, Bill Peduto, Dan Gilman, and Scott Schubert felt the same way. So trust was at the root of the meeting, our exchange. And so going to the meeting with Bill and Dan, I don't know, I had this level of like openness. You know, I didn't have any expectations, but I was open to the idea that they may not be racist. You know, I was open to the idea that they could be good people. And I believe that openness came partly from my trust in John, you know. And I remember sitting down and saying, you know, I didn't really have a desire to talk about the past. You know, this wasn't a meeting where I just wanted to say, you know, this is how I felt, you know, when I was shot and things like that. You know, I remember saying, you know, I want to talk about the future. You know, I want to talk about how we can, you know, do good things and prevent this from happening again. And they had this very similar perspective. We talked about solutions. That was, I mean, that's it. Like we, you know,
it's beautiful.
We dove right into solutions, and they acknowledged my pain, you know, and they share, you know, some things about, you know, the decisions, you know, they have to make as leaders, and, you know, how complicated it is. And, you know, how when they try to appease this group, they piss this group off, and, you know, all the political things. And they, you know, broke it down to me in a way that, you know, I really understood, you know. And I wouldn't say we came out of that group like hugging each other.
And, yeah.
But it was the follow up.
It's a step.
Right. You know, the openness, you know, text messages and phone calls, you know, that really helped us, you know, build that bond, you know. And the same thing with Scott. I would say, you know, I was a little bit more aloof going into the meeting with Scott. And that was just because he was a police officer. Right. You know, him, you know, being the chief of police, his badge, you know, I'm like, man, I don't trust any police officers. But it was interesting because I didn't have a meeting with Chief Schubert. I had a meeting with Scott.
Wow.
That made the biggest difference in the world. You know, and he shared his story. I shared my story. He shared his love for Pittsburgh and for his father, who was a Pittsburgh police officer, and how he looked up to his father. And that's what inspired him to become a police officer. I mean, we had so many similarities in our stories. And I think that is what really opened up my heart, you know, to, you know, get to a place where I consider, you know, Scott a friend and was open to, you know, collaborating with them around the HEAR Foundation.
Yeah, there's so much I want to unpack there. The first question that comes to my mind is just, what did you learn through this journey about judging or judging others? You know, I feel like we live in a culture where that's all we do, right? It's like, whether it's judging someone, and we're judging all these people we don't know. We don't know their intentions. We're judging them based on one little snippet of their life or one decision. Like, I'm just curious, what have you learned about judging, and what advice would you give to people who may judge often and get the retweets and get excited and, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I would encourage people not to fall victim to the instant gratification of division. It's easy to choose a side and, you know, feel good because you're getting retweets or comments by people who think similarly as you. And, you know, it takes real leadership to think outside of the box. And to lean into solutions, right? And so, you know, I'd encourage people to become more open-minded, to ask questions, to use their curiosity, right? A lot of times people credit my courage for some of the decisions I make as a leader. But I would say, and I believe that it's more curiosity than courage. Right. Because I'm genuinely curious to understand what someone else's lived experiences may have been to let them to see the world the way they see the world. I understand, you know, I see the world, you know, through a different lens than you may see the world, Doug, based on where I grew up, who I grew up with, different parts of my experience that I hold on to. There's parts of me that I hold on to that social norms may say is wrong, right? But the conditioning was so strong in my upbringing that it's hard for me to let go of these beliefs. And I challenge myself on them beliefs, you know, every time I find myself, leaning into that belief, I'm like, hey, you know, I have to check myself because of self-awareness, right? And so I would also encourage people to give themselves grace, right? And not grace to the point you become complacent in your beliefs, but a grace to understand that it takes time to unpack, you know, and unlearn many things that, you know, we learn through our social conditioning. And so give yourself grace, but also be intentional about unlearning and relearning different things about society so that you don't find yourself judging people.
That's so good. You know, our executive director at Light of Life, Jarrell Gilliam, is a mentor in my life. And as I stepped into a new role under him, he just said, Doug, lead with curiosity. And he said, let me give you three beautiful words to lead with. Help me understand.
Yeah.
You know, don't go in trying to do all, just, hey, help me understand what you do. Help me understand your perspective. And man, that's been so beautiful. And just with, you know, what you've been sharing and the meetings that you had, you know, I heard Mr. Rogers said once, that there isn't a person on the planet that you couldn't learn to love if you just heard their story. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, even so I explore and I play with this idea of generous curiosity. And so to that point, just imagine if we let our curiosity take us to look at the 5-year-old, you know, version of, you know, a world leader who may have caused a lot of destruction, right? That 5-year-old version, you know, may have had a Tonka truck or some type of doll and was a typical kid. Right. So what happened in between being a 5-year-old with a doll or a truck or a teddy bear to, you know, growing up to, you know, take a life? Right. And I think if we became more curious to unpack, you know, the conditioning or what had to happen in between those two points of life, one, we could understand the thinking of, you know, these, you know, people who grow up to be violent. And two, we can maybe catch, save their hearts, right? Or save their minds before they get to a point of committing a violent act. But it takes curiosity. Too often we are, reactive. You know, we see people acting out, you know, in the media, or we see, you know, people going to prison for different things and we lock them away, you know, and, my perspective is more, how can we be preventative, right? Mm. How can we show up and get people what they need before their hearts become hardened or before they lose hope in the world?
Yeah, that's so good. Another area I want to unpack is just unforgiveness. And forgive me if I don't remember this off the top of my head, but I believe the police officer that shot you, he kept his job, correct? Is he? Yep. Did you ever meet with him and reconcile? And I can.
Yeah. So I met with the officer who shot me. Wow, I think that was maybe 2 years ago.
Wow.
And everybody thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But it was really. My curiosity, right? Mm. Like to your mentor's point, you know, can you help me understand?
Mm.
You know, and not in a sense of like, you know, this need for some type of retribution or accountability or anything like that. But I genuinely wanted to understand, you know, how and why, you know, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Because from my perspective, you know, the two of us, we're the ones that, you know, had this moment on the side of the road. And if we were able to unpack what happened without, you know, attorneys involved, you know, my perspective is like, we have the answers, right? We have the solution, to, you know, to see, you know, what type of training could be done, you know, what type of awareness can we create, you know, within community, again, to prevent this from happening again. And so, you know, I've met with over the years, several different police officers who, knew, the officer who shot me, and they kind of helped, you know, facilitate it, you know. And so, there was a pastor there and a commander who is now a chief, for Duquesne University. Hmm. And, we got to talk, you know, we got to talk about solutions. Wow. We got to talk about, his experience after the shooting and mine. And it was a very interesting discussion, because, in many ways, I never considered, and, you know, my pain wouldn't allow me to consider what he may have went through.
Hmm.
You know, and so, hearing it from him was, very eye opening.
Wow. And I'm assuming that you've come to a place where you've forgiven him, if you're willing to meet him. What have you learned about forgiveness through this whole process? Cause I'm sure many people are dealing with unforgiveness listening to this.
Yeah. Forgiveness is a choice, right? But it's also not like, it's not a threshold that you cross. It's not a finish line. You don't wake up one day, forgive, and now you made it. It is a pendulum, bro. It swings back and forth. And, you know, to this day, you know, I have some days I wake up frustrated and angry. I'm a human, right? And so I think oftentimes people look at examples of forgiveness and they see those examples. They see the public figure of those examples, right? So people may see me smiling. To talk about Dr. King, right? You know, they share stories about Dr. King, but, you know, there's not a lot of examples of people sharing, you know, the behind the scenes of that process, right? And so I'd encourage people, one, to consider forgiveness for them, right? It's not for the other person. Forgiveness is more connected to quality of life for me. And so what I ask people is, can you imagine my life if every time I saw a police officer, I was triggered? Yeah, and, you know, and it triggered the hatred and resentment in me. I would not have a good quality of life. I could be at the park with my son having a great time and see a police officer and then completely have a bad day. And I didn't want anyone to have that amount of power over my happiness. Wow. And so I had to take my power back by just letting go. And it's not my, you know, responsibility to, like, you know, be stuck on like what accountability looks like and all these things, you know? And so I let it go. The other thing is, you know, give yourself grace. You know, you can work towards letting it go. You could, you know, I encourage people to choose forgiveness, you know, every day. You know, and it's like the light, man. It's like you're choosing to walk in the light every day. But some days, you know, your energy may be low and, you know, you may be in pain or you may have watched a movie or there may be something that triggers you. And it's okay to feel those emotions fully, right? So that doesn't mean you haven't forgiven. And I think it's very important to feel those emotions fully. Because it's kind of like a baby, man. You ever see a baby cry?
And like, oh yeah.
They let it all out, man, until they don't even have any more left, and they probably forget about what they were crying about and just move forward. As adults, man, we hold on to things. We suppress our emotions. You know, men and women do it, you know, and, you know, we try to just get through life without ever, you know, feeling those feelings fully. And so I encourage people to feel fully, acknowledge those emotions, and then let it go. And when you let it go, you know, that's where the real forgiveness happens. But then, you know, again, give yourself grace if you're ever triggered and you feel like, man, I hate this person today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to give yourself grace and say, yo, it's okay. I feel like this today, but I won't feel like this tomorrow.
Wow. I'm trying to think of how to word this question, but, you know, we live in a world where justice is important, and we're talking about judgment too. So there's situations that happen where it's like, okay, justice has to be served. Someone needs to get what they deserve. But then there's also like the love, forgiveness, and grace side. How do you balance whether, you know, it's your situation or you see another situation of something tragic that happens? Maybe it's police and whatever the situation is. How do you personally balance like the need for, we need to make this right. Justice needs to be served. People need to get what they deserve versus, man, we need to love each other, forgive each other, and reconcile. Like how do you balance that tension?
Yeah, I would say, you know, forgiveness or unforgiveness is not synonymous with accountability, right? You can still hold someone accountable, right? So if you wronged me, right, and I forgave you, I'm like, yeah, I'm letting this go. That doesn't mean I can't have a conversation with you about how you hurt me, right? It just means that you don't have the control over my happiness. You don't have the control over my peace of mind. And I will argue that forgiveness gives you, you know, a level of mental clarity, right? To position yourself to fight for justice in a way that, you know, holding on, you know, to that anger and resentment doesn't afford you the opportunity to. It's like boxing, right? You know, I used to box, man, and a lot of people think boxing, you know, is about pure strength and just being angry and being a good fighter. No, it's a science to it, man. You know, when you see somebody get angry and lose their mental clarity, it's over. You know what I mean? They get picked apart, you know? Yeah. And so I'd encourage people to use forgiveness as a tool to help them have a sound mind. And with that sound mind, they could become more strategic, more intentional, more focused on solutions. You know, I see it all the time with, you know, activists. Some activists are so emotionally connected to the movement that it's hard for them to make strategic decisions that get them closer to the resolution that they're looking for.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. One more topic I want to cover before we go into the lightning round, which is a bunch of fun questions I always ask. Man, I've heard you talk in other interviews about just how you've been able through your experience to turn pain into purpose. You've mentioned it several times here already of kind of what you're doing today, but I feel like, man, that's one reason I feel like we connected so well. You know, I have a lot of pain in my background, and to live intentionally and make a difference with that pain makes all the difference in the world. So can you just talk about what would your advice be someone who's been through a lot of pain on how they can use that for purpose?
Absolutely. I would encourage someone, right, if anyone listening to this, if you think about one of the most painful experiences of your life, and view it through the lens of solutions, right? Like, how could this have been different? You know, if I could have leaned on anyone and they could have gave me any type of resource, what would that resource have been, right? And then you could position yourself, right, as an expert, you know? And as you position yourself as an expert with the solutions, you know, if this is something that you're truly passionate about, you'll feel it in your soul. Like you'll feel the passion, you'll feel the fulfillment and you become an expert. It's kind of like for my life, almost every experience that I had, even some that, you know, I was ashamed of, right? Like, you know, when my father went to prison when I was five, and he didn't come home until I was 19 years old. But now I mentor young men and women who have parents who are incarcerated. You know, I talk to men, you know, who are incarcerated about how to build relationships with their children, you know, on the outside. I lost when I was 13, I lost my sister. You know, I help with grief counseling, right? I mean, there's so many aspects of my experience that, you know, I leverage to help other people. And, you know, for those people who have experienced painful situations, you know, I'd encourage them to, again, view yourself as an expert, be very authentic, right? And open-minded when you are sharing your story, when you are looking at your story, because you never know who your story can help.
Come on. Well, Leon, thank you for sharing your story. Again, people can get your book. And again, we'll include links to that in the show notes where you can read about a story and the lessons. There's so many lessons already to unpack from this. But I just want to say thank you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of people that you've already helped. Thank you for turning your pain into purpose. You could have gone a different direction. You could have made it all for naught. But you're using your life to make a difference. And man, that's why I love you so much. And I just can't wait to see how you're used in the future.
I love you too, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you here soon.
Yeah. And hey, before we end, we have to jump into the lightning round. So these are fun questions I ask at the end of every interview. The first one is, and Leon was not prepped for any of these, so let's go. Real authentic answers. What is the best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
Woo. My grandfather, he told me I was depressed, and he told me you're experiencing the lowest moment of your life right now. But it's impossible to fall off the floor. The only way to go is up, and how high you climb is up to you.
Come on, Grandpa. Let's go. That's good stuff, man. If you could put a quote on a billboard for anyone to read, what would it say?
I love you.
Do you have a book other than your own, one or two books that have impacted you in a significant way that you recommend most often?
Yeah, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho.
So good.
And let's see, The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav.
I haven't read that one. I'll check it out. You get to spend time with a lot of leaders. When you get to spend time with someone that you admire and look up to and want to learn from, do you have a go-to question that you always ask?
I don't.
Okay. what is your biggest leadership pet peeve?
A pet peeve? Leaders who know all the answers. They think they got all the answers and they're not open to listening or adapting.
Lead with curiosity, bro. Love it. What is something, I don't know if you have an actual bucket list or not, but what's something you've done in your life that you think everyone should experience before they die?
Skydiving.
All right. How was that?
Oh man, it was, I'm scared of heights.
Wow.
And it was one of those experiences that, you know, I tricked my mind into, but it opened me up. I was like, man, if I could do this, I can do anything.
Wow. Would you do it again?
Oh, yeah. Have you been?
No. It's on the bucket list.
We can go together and film it for we could do like a L3 leadership skydiving thing.
Let's go, man. It's like the Tony Robbins firewalk. Instead of that, we'll just jump out of a plane.
Exactly.
Let's go, man. Well, stay tuned for that, listeners. We'll get that video out as soon as it happens.
Yeah. And we go, well, hold us to this. I'm down. We got to hold Doug to this.
I'm in, man. I have to make sure my wife's okay with it, but I'm in, man. If you could go back.
She could come too.
we'll see if that happens. If you could go back and have coffee with yourself at any age and you would have actually listened to yourself, what age would you meet with yourself and what would you have told that version of Leon?
I would say 14. And I would tell myself to just stay focused on your goals and be patient with yourself.
That's good. And I know you're a very, very young man, but one day at the end of your life, looking back, what ultimately do you want your legacy to be and what do you want to be remembered for?
Yeah, I want to be remembered for just bringing joy into the world and helping as many people as I can help themselves heal. Mm. Yeah. So I don't want to be the one to heal them. You know, I want to be like the spark, right? The catalyst that remind them that they are capable of healing themselves.
So good. Open-ended. Anything else you want to leave leaders with today as we wrap up?
Yeah. So if you could repeat after me. Every time I speak, I do a pledge.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we must give up to go up.
We must give up to go up.
We must give up to grow up.
We must give up to grow up.
We must give up on the way up.
We must give up on the way up.
And give up even more to stay up.
And give up even more to stay up.
I cannot teach.
I cannot teach.
What I do not know.
What I do not know.
I cannot lead.
I cannot lead.
Where I will not go.
Ooh, where I will not go.
I am.
I am.
Because we are.
Because we are.
We are.
We are.
Because I am.
Because I am.
I am my brother's keeper.
I am my brother's keeper.
I am my sister's keeper.
I am my sister's keeper.
I am destined for greatness.
I am destined for greatness.
Because I attract.
Because I attract.
What I am.
What I am.
In the African language, we say ashe.
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 Thank you.
Let's go, man. I'm ready to like run out of the building. I love stuff like that, man. I might repeat that with my kids. Thank you for sharing.
I designed a self-care toolkit, so I'll send it to you.
Oh, come on.
And the pledge is in the toolkit and everything. So.
Oh, well, yeah. Leon, it's an honor to call you friend. Thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast. And by the time people are listening to this, you have already spoken at L3 one day. But thank you for doing that. And just thank you everything that you're doing for people and the planet and making it a better place.
Oh, man. Thank you, brother. I love you, man.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. Well, leader, thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Leon. I hope that you were inspired. I hope that you were challenged, and I hope you fell in love with Leon just like I did, because he is incredible. And if you'd like to connect with him, you can find links to ways to connect with him and everything that we discussed in the show notes at l3leadership.org/414. And as always, leader, I like to end every episode with a quote, and I'll quote Mark Twain today, who said this. He said, "Always do right. It will gratify some people and astonish the rest." Well, leader, I said every episode, but know that my wife, Laura, and I love you. We believe in you, and don't quit. Keep leading. The world desperately needs your leadership. I'll talk to you next episode.